A leading economic analyst of Asia's successful industrialization, Robert Wade, has usefully summarized some of the key investments that Japan made in rural Taiwan. A good communications infrastructure was laid down, designed not with the narrow purpose of extracting some primary raw material, but with the aim of increasing production of smallholder rice and sugar, both wanted in Japan. Under these policies, expansion in irrigation and drainage, dissemination of improved or better seeds, and spread in the use of fertilizers and manures were all energetically attempted, sometimes even with the aid of the police force. The statistics indicate continuously rising trends, quoting Ishikawa, 1967-102. Farmers were grouped into farmer cooperatives, irrigation associations, and landlord-tenant associations so as both to accelerate the spread of technical knowledge and to keep them under control. After the end of Japanese colonial rule in 1945, Taiwan invested heavily in rural infrastructure and irrigation, backed by U.S. aid. Again, as Wade summarizes, agricultural production grew at 4.4% a year between 1954 and 1967, faster than just about anywhere else in Asia. The surge of agricultural growth checked discontent with the nationalist regime in the countryside, helping to stabilize the industrial investment climate. By 1960, rice yields per crop reached 3 tons per hectare, the highest in Asia outside of Japan. Agriculture could thus provide a generous investable surplus for the rest of the economy, and in the 1950s, for export. No such investments were made in Ghana's agriculture, or for that matter in most of Africa's. While Korea received U.S. aid amounting to about $65 per capita in 2005 dollars during 1953 to 1961, U.S. aid to Ghana amounted to $2 per capita during the same period. Initial conditions of these countries as of 1960 could not have been more different. Korea and Taiwan had high literacy, high food yields, and high life expectancy. Ghana had the opposite. As early as 1960, Korea and Taiwan had cereal yields of 3 tons per hectare, while Ghana's yields were a meager 0.8 tons per hectare. As early as 1960, South Korean farmers were applying 155 kilograms of fertilizer per hectare, while Ghana's were averaging less than 1 kilogram per hectare. India is yet another example that is frequently cited as self-made development, whereas, in fact, external assistance also played a critical role. As in Korea and Taiwan, the colonial era bequeathed to India some vital infrastructure, especially the rail system, which served India in crucial ways during its recent economic takeoff. Even more important, India's Green Revolution of the 1960s and 1970s was strongly supported by external assistance. Though India has wonderful indigenous scientific capacity, the Rockefeller Foundation's support for improved wheat varieties also was crucial. Two great scientists, Norman Borlaug of the Rockefeller Foundation and M.S. Swaminathan, India's director of wheat research in the 1960s, teamed up to disseminate the improved seed varieties first developed by Borlaug in Mexico and selected for applicability to Indian conditions by Swaminathan's team. Their work took on special urgency after back-to-back droughts in 1964-1965, which required India to rely on massive shipments of emergency U.S. food aid. Borlaug's message to India was that there was need for a mass scale-up of high-yield agriculture, supported by strong and consistent government guarantees to farmers of fertilizers, high-yield seeds, credits, and guaranteed sale prices for output. In a 1968 speech, Borlaug declared, "I wish I were now a member of India's Congress. I would stand up out of order every few minutes and shout in a loud voice, 'What India needs now is fertilizer, 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 credit, 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 and fair prices, fair prices, fair prices.'" The U.S. government strongly heeded the call by financing the vital inputs. As explained in 1968 by U.S. Aid Administrator William Goud, "The developing nations, their governments, their institutions, and their farmers, cannot sustain the Green Revolution without outside support. They lack the skills to do the necessary adaptive research. They lack the capital to build fertilizer plants. They lack the facilities and the technicians needed to train their people in the new ways. If this agricultural revolution is to succeed, it can only do so as the result of a working partnership between the advanced and the developing nations. This is why fertilizer is rapidly becoming the largest single element in the AID program. This is why AID is backing a growing number of American companies in their efforts to put up fertilizer plants in countries which are seeking to expand their production of food. Fertilizer for India was the largest single item in the U.S. AID budget at the end of the 1960s. All told, India has received around $160 billion in aid since 1960, a sum that has been vital in helping India to achieve the Green Revolution, build infrastructure, control disease, and strengthen science and higher education.